So, good morning, Rabbi Isai. Our limud of halacha is as a schus refuah for Yosef Dov ben Chayla. He should have a refuah shleima b'soich shal chayla Yisrael. So, just over the next few days, we said that we would learn a few halachas or a few inyonim to do with Tu B'Shvat.
Yeah.
So what we learned yesterday was that Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, is the cut-off date l'masrois. That's really the only thing, and the masrois of the Peiros Ha'ilon. So in other words, anything that grew on the tree and reached the stage of Chanoto. Chanoto is the beginning of the peri, when you see the beginning of the fruit. Anything that reached that stage up to Tu B'Shvat is last year's produce. Anything after Tu B'Shvat is regarded as next year's produce. Why could you not take Maaser from one year to the other? That's a general rule in Trumas and Maaseres, but in particular in Maaser Sheni. Why? Because every year Truma is the same. For 6 years out of seven, you take Truma, and the Truma is the same for 6 years out of seven. In what's called in Shemitah, in the year of Shemitah, there are no Trumas and no Maaseres at all. Right. There are no Trumas and Maaseres in Shemitah. You just take, everything is Hefka, and whatever it is, that's what's called. And you don't have to take Trumas and Maaseres. But in the other years, the 6 years of the cycle, then Truma is the same every year. It's either a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th. Or Min HaTorah, Chito Achas, Poteres Sakri, even one grain is enough, Min HaTorah. But Midrabanon, it's a 40th, 50th, or 60th, depending on how generous you are. Maaserishon goes to the Kohen. Maaserishon goes to the Levi, and that's 10% of your produce. 10% of what's left after you've deducted the Truma. And then comes the next thing, which is Maaser Sheni. Now,
how does this work in practice? Because the date of taking Maaser is when you collected it and you brought it into your storeroom. So that could be earlier.
It might be earlier or later. It doesn't matter. It depends whether it's this year's crop or last year's crop. It doesn't matter when you actually picked it and took it into the storeroom.
Depends on what.
Yeah, it could be quite difficult to work out exactly, you know, which peiros on the tree were chanoto, reached the stage of chanoto up till Tu B'Shvat, and which became chanotod after.
Yeah.
I'm sure chanotod is not a verb, but reached that stage anyway afterwards. But in any event, that's it's basically a cut-off date, it's a year end. Right, the same way that you have a tax year end, whatever the earnings are up to that date is last year's tax, and whatever the earnings is after that date is regarded as next year's earnings. So, in Maaser Sheni, there is a difference from year to year, though. In year Shemitah, there's nothing. In year one, I hope I got this right, in year one and two, it's Maaser Sheni. It's your product, it's your produce, it belongs to you, but you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. And if you can't schlep it to Yerushalayim, then you apoide it, you take the money to Yerushalayim, and you buy food with it in Yerushalayim. That's year one and two. Then in year three, it switches to Maaser Oni. And that year, the Maaser Sheni is given to the Aniyim. And then in years four and five, it goes back to Maaser Sheni, and you take it to Yerushalayim, and it's yours. And then in year six, it becomes Maaser Oni as well. So therefore, from year to year, certainly in the Maaser Sheni and the Maaser Oni, things are changing. So clearly I can't take, let's say, last year's Maaser Sheni, or things that grew last year's Maaser Sheni, and give it this year to the Oni. Or last year's Maaser Oni, and give it this year to the Maaser Sheni, and eat it myself, when it really belongs to the Aniyim. And therefore there had to be a cut-off date, there has to be a change, changeover date for the Maaser Sheni, and there is for the Maaser Oni, and there is for all the Trumas and Maaseres, and that date is Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilon, according to, we call it Lo Ilonois, but according to the Mishnah, it's called Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilon, and that cutoff date is Rosh Chodesh Shvat according to Beis Shammai, and Tu B'Shvat according to Beis Hillel. And that's why, really, it's not a Yom Tov, it's not a Yom Hadin. It's not really a Yom Tov. It's not more of a Yom Tov in theory than the 5th of April, yeah, or the 4th of April, the end of the tax year, right, or the 31st of January when you've got to submit your returns. right? They're not Yomim Tovim. And therefore, this year, this week, Tu Bishvat is not really a Yom Tov. There is no mitzvah of Suda. There's no Issa Melocha. There's nothing that even says that if you do Melocha on Tu Bishvat, you're not Roi Zimim Brocha. None of that really exists. The only thing is Tachnun. Right? Even the Yekas don't say Tachnun, and even the Yekas don't say Tachnun on the Mincha beforehand.
Right.
Yeah? So the Mincha beforehand, no Tachnun, which is in itself, I suppose, a reason for Simcha. Yeah, but we don't say Tachnun. But apart from that, I'm not even sure. I don't know. I need to check it out. Hesped and Tarnis on what's called, I think, is also Osa, yeah, on Tu Bishvat. So therefore, Rachman and Islan, if there will be a Levaya, there won't be a Hesped. It'll just go off, you know, straight away. But apart from that, basically, it isn't a Yom Tov. It's a tax year. So people make a Seder out of it. We'll talk about eating fruits and making a Tish out of it. But it's the excuse for a Tish, right? But it's not actually a Yom Tov. Okay, fine. Our speakers arrive. So we'll do an announcement. So it's Torah Way Northwest London. It is Tuesday, the 30th of Shvat, and the 11th of February. And our speaker is Rabbi Shimshon Silkenschlitter on the subject of Mountain Suspended.
Ooh. That keeps us in suspense. Oh dear. Too early in the morning. Good morning. So, Suspended Mountains is the title is taken from a very well-known Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Gemara in Shabbos Daf Pei Ches Amud Aleph quotes a posuk from this week's parasha, where the posuk says "Vayisyatzvu besachtis hohor," which is often translated to mean that Klal Yisrael camped at the foot of the mountain. However, the Gemara continues and says, "Omar Rav Avdimi bar Chomo bar Chaso, melamed shekofo Hakadosh Baruch Hu aleim zahar ki gigis." This posuk teaches us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted the mountain over the heads of Klal Yisrael like a barrel. And he said to them, "Im atem mekablim al Torah mutav," if you accept my Torah, good. "Vim lav shom tehei kavuraschem," but if not, where you are will be your burial plot, effectively threatening to drop the mountain on their heads. That's the Gemara. So that's Pshat Vayisyatzvu Besachtis Ohor. Doesn't just mean that they camped at the foot of the mountain, but Besachtis, Meloshen Tachas, they were literally under the mountain. The whole mountain was suspended over their heads. The Gemara asks, but if that's the case, Mikam Moedor Rabbeloi Raiso, which effectively means that Klal Yisrael were forced to keep the Torah. They accepted the Torah under duress. They didn't really have a choice. Zogde Gemara, and this is maybe for next month, Omar Rova, it doesn't matter, because Afal Pikein, Hoto Kiblu Obimei Achashverosh. They accepted the Torah anew in the time of Purim, Tichsiv, like it says in the Pasuk in Megillah, Kimu V'Kiblu Ayehudim, what's Kimu V'Kiblu? Kimu Ma Shekiblu Kvar. So that's the Gemara's Kasha with a fascinating answer. So what happened between Shavuos of Matan, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Purim, all those many hundreds of years later? So this is Einzach. But Tosfos asks L'chaira a more straightforward question that should bother everyone when you read this Gemara. Zog Tosfos. Kovanim ha'gigigis. First Tosfos on the daf. Ba'afal pi shekva hikdimu naaseh l'nishma. In other words, hang on a minute. HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers the Klal Yisrael the Torah, as he did all the other nations of the world. The reason the Klal Yisrael were selected is because our response was, we want this. Naaseh l'nishma, we like this. Whereas all the other nations of the world said, well, hang on a minute, Maksibbe, Boshtet, we'll get back to you, we'll consider the deal. Klal Yisrael just said, whatever, no, we're in. And that's why Klal Yisrael received the Torah, and that's why we received two crowns, Visishtet in the Gemara, crown of Nasir, crown of Nishma. Yeah, because of our own volition, we said, we want this Torah. HaKadosh Baruch is putting a gun to the head, effectively saying, accept my Torah or else. If you compare it to a parent with a child, you know, you can see such coercion might be necessary if they're not eating their greens, their salad, their broccoli. Yeah, eat up or else, right? If serving them ice cream, right? No parent ever put any threats on a child. You don't eat your ice cream. We want this. It's delicious. Klal Yisrael said it's delicious. Nasav and Nishma. So Tosis provide their own answer, its own answer. Shimi Yochoizrim, Kishiyuro Isha Gedoylo. Perhaps we can look at this from a slightly different perspective based on the Torah of the Maharal. Actually I'm going to be in Prague this week, Mr. Shem. Mr. Shem, maybe I'll say it over when we're there. And also Rabbi Chonon. And I think there's a major yesod in this Gemara, besides for the yesod of Tosis, that is relevant and is practical, and that relates to the all-time existential question that is raised by many of the great Bali Machshova, going back hundreds of years, even thousands of years, and that is as follows: one of the Ikrei Emuna, the 10th Iker, says, "Ani mamin b'emunah shelema shabbos baruch shemoi yodea kol ma'aseh v'nei odom." Hashem knows the actions of every single person. V'chol machshavosam shenemar hayotzi yachad libo ma'mevino kol ma'aseh. The way that Iker is mentioned in Yigdal, because the tefillah of Yigdal is effectively a collection of the Ikrim into a single tefillah, single poem, is Tzoyfe v'yoydea sesoreinu mabit l'soyf dovor b'kad mosoy. Now those words mabit l'soyf dovor b'kad mosoy mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees at the beginning what will be at the end. Mabit l'soyf dovor, he sees the end result b'kad mosoy before it's even started. So included in one of the most important yesodes of Yiddishkeit is the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yoydea, but not just Yodea in the moment, but he knows even before it's happened. Because Baruch Hu has Yodea before the Maisa. Hashem knows exactly what's going to happen with every single person, all the way until the end of time. The problem with this is whether the Rambam Shtel Zavek the Kasha in a few places, in Hilchus Yisod HaTorah, Hilchus Teshuvah, and other places also, where the Rambam says, hang on a moment, Posh the Kasha. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows ahead of time what's going to be, then that action or that event is going to have to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's idea is mechayev the outcome, right? There's no way that it can't happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not guessing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not using probability and mathematics and computer algorithms to figure out, you know, potentially where this is going, right? People trying to predict the stocks, you know, they're going to go up and go down. This is idea. This is absolute idea. Absolutely, what he calls Yodea Esadova Alburioi, with absolute clarity. Midfred the Rambam, let's say a person is faced with a Nisoyan. Does he do the right thing? He doesn't do the right thing. Is he going to be a Tzadik or a Rosha? When he means a Tzadik or Rosha in status Bechlal, or he means in the moment, is he going to do the Maisa Tzadik and the Maisa Rosha? But either way, yeah, Dr. Rambam, Mimonavshach, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu know what he's going to do, he's not going to do it? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's going to do, then he has no choice but to do it. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't, but if the person has a choice to do something different, then it turns out HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't know something? One of the greatest questions, that the Rambam's not the first to write about it, but it's often attributed to the Rambam, and it comes on before the Rambam. For example, Sadia Gaon, Emunas Vedeus, and other Rishonim, and other possibly even other Goyim, also, obviously Sadia Gaon came before the Rambam, also busy themselves in trying to address this all-important, essential, vital, and categorical question. So there are various different Malachim. Reb Sadia Gaon himself doesn't seem to be overly bothered by the Kasha, as doesn't the Rivosh, who writes about it in Shuvas, and the Ravid, the contemporary of the Rambam, they don't seem to be massively, overly concerned about the problem. They'll say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, because that's what you're going to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's idea doesn't necessarily take away your freedom of choice. Bit problematic. Because L'chore it does. Like, it's not clear why they're not so bothered about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't not know something.
You're doing it because of your own choice.
Yeah, but the Maaseh said, did you really have another option? Technically not.
You did. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what you're going to choose.
But that means that is what you're going to choose. Yeah. You might stand there deliberating between right or left, but you're going to go right. You can stand there all day and all the next day. You're going to go right because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows you're going right.
Yeah,
so you don't really have the choice of going left. You might think you do, but you don't actually. Left, right? Exactly. So left is effectively a blocked path. Now you're looking at it from every possible angle. You're wasting your time.
But
how can you go left?
Exists outside of time.
Okay, you want to talk about time. Okay, if there's time, we'll come to time.
Right.
Okay? I think we're also running out of time. Yeah. Which is an interesting expression, by the way, to run out of time. How can you run out of... You can run out of a room. How do you run out of time? But okay, fine. We'll come back to that. The Maaseh Reb Chaim Friedlander, when he quotes Reb Sadia Gaon, he invokes the principle that we find in the Gemara a lot called Lemafreya, which we call retroaction, retrospective. Many instances, for example, let's say Reuben sells Shimon a cow al tanai on condition that it's going to rain tomorrow. Right? So Shimon goes home with his cow, locks it up in his barn, and that night Levi comes and steals the cow, and the next day it rains. So who does Levi pay the cow back to? Yeah, at the time of the gazela, who did it actually belong to? Or in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Gemara in Gittin, a man says to his wife, "This is your get mikan v'ad shloshim yoim. If I don't come back after 30 days, because he's going out to war, let's say, then I don't want you to be an aguna. I want you to be divorced. If I don't come back within 30 days, then you're divorced from now." And 15 days later, she's mezana with someone else. Well, maybe not mezana, right? And then 31 days later, the fella comes back, right? So it turns out she was taka divorced at the time. Yes, it is a child of mamza. Yeah? And many instances like that, where effectively the future is determining the past. Something down the road can say, so that's what it was. And in a certain sense, our activities today are what determined what HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew all along. In a sort of, in a retroactive kind of mahalach. Which again is, Dandiyas Daiti is shver, but at least it addresses the question. It's interesting, we'll come back to the Har Sinai in a minute, but Reb Dessler, when he writes about this, fascinatingly, he quotes one of the world's most famous paradoxes. I think it's called Zeno's motion paradox. The Greek philosopher Zeno was famous for his paradoxes. One of his famous paradoxes is that when a hare and a tortoise have a race, as long as the tortoise has a head start, then the hare can never overtake the tortoise, even though it's going much faster. And that is because the hare has to catch up with where the tortoise is before it can overtake it. But the tortoise isn't there anymore because it's moving. And as long as the tortoise remains in motion, the hare can never actually catch up the tortoise. Now, we can talk about this after, right? But it really, really works. It actually starts to hurt the head. But there is such a concept which basically means you can never walk out of the room. He doesn't really have to talk about a hare or a tortoise. But Edsem, you should never be able to walk out of that door, because before you get to the door, you have to get halfway to the door. And before you get halfway to the door, you have to get halfway to the door. And that is a recurring thing for forever. Because infinity both goes forward and backwards. Because just like you can multiply forever, you can also divide forever. You can never get to your point because you have to get halfway to that point before you get to that point. So forever after, you've got this problem. And then there are other paradoxes. Odessa is aware that not everybody's going to necessarily appreciate a paradox. So he presents a different type of, let's call it, conundrum. Not really a paradox, as an example, which is not as, how should we say, it's not as clever, and it doesn't tickle the mind as much, but it still kind of serves a purpose. By the way, another classic paradox is the sheet of paper. You have a sheet of paper, and on the top side it says, the statement on the other side of this paper is true. So you turn it over and you read the statement on the other side of this piece of paper is false.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So you spend the rest of your day trying to work that one out. Okay. But that Rav Dessler doesn't quote that. He does quote another example of somebody from another existence who comes to Earth and he opens up the back of a watch or a clock. Right, and he looks at the mechanics in the back of the clock and he frowns because he sees that there's a mechanism pulling the hands forward clockwise, but there's also some sort of resistance in there putting it back, holding it back. Now we know why that needs to happen, because if the hands on the clock just spin around aimlessly, then it's a waste of time. It's a useless piece of apparatus. It doesn't do anything, right? There needs to be a little bit of resistance on the second hand, a little bit of more resistance on the minute hand, and even more resistance on the hour hand. So in other words, even though the hour hand is trying to pull clockwise, there needs to be something to pull it and pulling it anti-clockwise at the same time. The purpose is a timepiece. But what's happening is a contradiction. You've got something pulling in this direction and in that direction, the sum of which equals more than the total of which equals more than the sum of the parts, but there's an inherent contradiction going on at the same time. And there are many other paradoxes like this. I mean, I would have thought an aeroplane sitting in the sky is a bit of a paradox. And it is a paradox, because you've got gravity pulling it down, you've got some sort of lift and thrust or something keeping it up, and the aerodynamic, you know, engineers know how this works. But the Maaseh said there's a paradox going in front of your eyes. In fact, the Rama Mishmoyna Prokin, when he wants to talk about something that's absolutely wild and impossible, he talks about a metal ship sitting in the sky. The Rambam talks about a metal ship sailing and an iron ship sitting in the sky, not sailing on the sea, but sailing through the sky. The Rambam says, what kind of mishigas would that be? Until wings. Yeah, it's not that the Rambam didn't see birds in the sky, but the concept that such a thing could work. Anyway, Al Kaponim. So Rav Dessler's Mahalach is a paradox. Dost a paradox. Right, the Kodesh Baruch Hu knows what you're going to do, 100%. It's one of the animamins. You have full control over your life, and you make the choices that you are held accountable for and that you take credit for, is 100% true. Either two can't be true at the same time. A paradox. Paradox. He writes about this in the second Kundus HaBechira. Nicht als stuff, you know, stimmen. Stimmen. The Rambam himself has an absolutely fascinating Mahalach. Fascinating Mahalach. Absolutely mind-boggling Mahalach, the Rambam. I think mind-boggling. Where he talks about Yediyah as a concept, knowledge. What is knowledge? So, human knowledge is something that is acquired. Everything that we know, we had to learn. Either we learned it academically, we went to school, we went to school, we did our basic, you know, arithmetic, and then we did our algebra, and then we moved on to trigonometry, and then we went on to calculus, I don't know. Yeah, you learn, right? But there was a time when we didn't know it. And we know the snow is cold, and we know the fire is hot, and we know that chocolate tastes better than vanilla. So these are learned experiences, right? Things that you have to sort of bring in from the outside. Everything that, apart from certain instincts, like a baby somehow knows how to cry, if you can even call that knowledge. It's not really knowledge, but let's say it is, yeah? But certainly knowledge that we refer to like data, like language, and so on, is something that we had to import, right? The mind is blank, the mind comes into the world absolutely blank, and it's gathering information the whole time. And what we have is basically a memory bank that contains all these pieces of knowledge. Oh. How does the Kodesh Baruch Hu know anything? Dr. Rambam. How could Shpochen know something? Could it be that Shpochen has to learn it? It's a crazy thing to think, right? Elamai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to know things not from outside, but from inside. In fact, the Rambam says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge is a part of him. As Asa Loshen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his knowledge and his knowledge is him. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, we don't know what that looks like. We've got no human frame of reference to talk about a knowledge that is self-generated. How can you self-generate your own knowledge? It makes no sense. Imagine I can't speak French and I just suddenly says, je m'appelle, it doesn't work. Right? You have to go and learn, right? And then you gather. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously doesn't have to do what how he does know, basically, but I know how he doesn't know. Memela, I don't know if everyone understands the Rambam like this. I've had various debates with people, including arguably the deepest thinker in this town. About this, it was kind of masculine in the end, but I think this is what the Rambam was saying. Lanias Daiti. The Rambam was saying that what's the kasha? Because Baruch Hu knows what you're going to do, therefore you have to do it. Why? Well, why does that logic add up? Just because Hashem knows it's going to happen, therefore it has to happen. Yes, because all type of knowledge that we are familiar with is knowledge that is created by an event. How do you know there was a crash on Golders Green Road? Because there was one. You can't know something that didn't happen. You can't know something that isn't. That something has to happen to create the information, create the data that you then learn, right, and keep for yourself. But if it doesn't happen, then there is no knowledge. And that's why sometimes it's referred to as eventual knowledge, because it's knowledge that is created by an event. Oh, right, if you learn, you know, little children in school, 2 + 2 = 4. So the teacher puts 2 apples on the table, 2 oranges, and go, let's do this, everyone. Everyone together, 1, 2, 3, 4. Ah, there were 2, 2, got it, 4, right? But there have to be the apples and oranges, otherwise there isn't. But if we can imagine a yediyah that is not related to the event, that is not generated by an event, but it's something that is internal, that is self-generated, then it doesn't matter whether the event happens or not, because Baruch Hu's yediyah is separate from the event. The whole kasha says, well, I'm going to have to do it, because how else could a Kosh Baruch Hu know something without it actually happening? Das nishin kasha, Kosh Baruch Hu's knowledge anyway doesn't work like that. I don't know how it does work, but I know it doesn't work like that. So it doesn't matter. Just we have maybe 1 minute to talk about time. Chasam Sofer writes about this in Shuvas. Chasam Sofer, it's interesting, the Rambam himself, who writes about this concept called the Brias Hazman, the creation of time. The Lashon of the Rambam in the Nevuchim is Hazman Nivro ki Hagalgal Nivro. And we know, thanks to a lot of the developments of the last century, how time and space are related. But Etzem, nothing can exist without time. And in fact, the Sforim say that the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu created actually was time. So that's really for 2 months' time now. That's really for Nissan. Nissan's all about Zaman. Yeah. Kachatzos HaLayla and all of this, which is 2 weeks ago or in a few weeks' time. Anyway, Al Kaponim, the point is that there was once a time when there was no time. There was a time before time. The first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to shaf and had to put into existence was a concept called time. HaKadosh Baruch himself is above time. But in order for anything to exist, the three dimensions, that it has to have a length, and it has to have a width, and it has to have a height. Every single physical object needs to have those 6 points, top to bottom, left to right, and front to back. That's why the physical world is represented by the number 6. Right? But the fourth dimension, of course, is time. For anything to exist, we mean that it exists in time. If there's a tree standing outside, if we say that there's a tree standing outside, we automatically mean two things. We mean there's something that's occupying a certain amount of space. It has to occupy some space, otherwise it isn't. Right? But it also has to occupy time. It has to have at least been there for a moment. It could stand there in all its glory, but if it wasn't there in time, then it could take up all the space in the world, but it isn't there. Whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Versteitzich, is completely prior to all of this, and therefore above all of this, and is not dictated at all by the limitations of space, nor time. Right? That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, which we can't say, the Shem Havaya, is Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is comprised of Hoy Hoy V'Yeh, which means a lot more than that he was, is, and will be, but rather means he was, is, and will be all at the same time. Anyway, this is a big, big Hoy Chen Yonim to be spoken about when there's more time. Aber in Chasam Sofer zogt er, that for Bechira to operate, obviously, you need time. Bechira has to be in the future. You can't choose something that's already happened in the past. By definition, when you're going to choose something, it means you're going to choose something that is going to happen. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows it's going to happen is not because he's looking into the future, but it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the future while he's in the past and in the present all at the same time. But I'd like to introduce a Yesoid from Rabbi Chana, which is also Be'etzem in the Meshech Chochmah, this is sort of in the Meshech Chochmah, this is parasha also on these Pesukim. Rabbi Chana says a Yesoid Niflo, a very, very, very big Yesoid. If I can introduce Rabbi Chana with a very quick vote from the Chofetz Chaim, because I think it brings out Rabbi Chana. Chofetz Chaim, of course, was his Rebbe, so I'm sure he won't mind. Chofetz Chaim, Zog Pshat, when we say a Hadron, so the Tfil is, Moedem Anachem Lefanecho, Moedem Anachem Lefanecho, Shesamtach Chalkeinu Miyoshe Vesemedesh, Vesamtach Chalkeinu Miyoshe Vekronish. Right? Shona Amelim Vahim Amelim, Ona Mashkim Vahim Mashkim, Ona Rotsim Vahim Rotsim, etc. So Ona Amelim U Mekablim Sechar, Vahim Amelim Vahim Mekablim Sechar. Which means that they toil, people out there, they're working very hard, And we toil. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, what's Pshat? And we get sechar, they don't get sechar. They don't get rewarded. Frank the Chofetz Chaim, sure they get rewarded. Who works for nothing? Nobody works for nothing. Right? No one works for nothing. Right? Even the window cleaners at the end, who pay? Well, what do we mean, Einu Mekabel Sechar? What are you going to say? It means they're not Mekabel Sechar, Olam Haba? Okay, it doesn't say that. It says, Einu Mekabel Sechar. Zog the Chofetz Chaim, are you soid, Godel, v'niflo? What happens in this world if somebody works really, really hard, but it doesn't work out? What if they use the wrong material on the windows and your windows are even more smeary than they were before you started? What if you have an athlete who dreams one day of the Olympics and his whole life, since he was 5 years old, all he's ever done, all he's ever eaten is something that's green. He never go to school. He's swimming in frozen lakes at 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever it takes. Oh, no friends, no nothing. Right, this is his moment. The gun goes off and he trips on his shoelaces. Yeah, let's say. So what color medal is he getting? Nothing. Red face and nothing else. No one cares. He goes, lettuce, cabbage. You don't win. You snooze, you lose. That's it. It's over. Why does someone puts all his money and all his investment and all his time into producing some fantastic product? Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Right? No one's buying it. No one cares. In the Olam Hazeh, your effort is not rewarded. It just isn't. People have to claim that it is. At school, they say, nah. It's not true. Tachlis, in every industry, if you produce, you win. No product, no win. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, the opposite is true. The complete opposite is true. Complete, absolute opposite is true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need product. He doesn't need that. Nothing. The ik is yogati umotsosi tami. Yogati. I've put in the effort. The effort is what generates the reward, not the product. The product doesn't even need to happen. In fact, if a person puts their effort and their thought and their planning into something and it doesn't materialize, straight in the Gemara, Kosh Baruch is mitzarif, machshova, toiva, lemaisa. Kosh Baruch is like, it's like, it's yours, you're done. But achom is nishkaton, don't worry. That's how you say by Yitzchak, Keitzchai, afterlife. He didn't die, he did. Kosh Baruch wants the rutz and Kosh Baruch wants the desire. Achmana liba boy, dosi de ike. The ikka of a maisa mitzvah is what you put into it, not the actual shell. The person goes through the motions and fill it on and off. Who cares? Memele zogt the Chofetz Chaim. Dostum shan hadrin. Onu amelim. Umekadim secha on the omel. Person schwitzes over a daf gemara for 4 hours and still doesn't get pshat. Because Baruch said, I'll give you secha. Somebody else walks in, he's a genius, walks out. Shkoyach. You can win a lottery ticket in the Olam Hazeh and just become wealthy overnight. Very nice. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, it's all about the Omol. A person does an Avera, Lo Yaleinu. There's a huge difference if he does it by Mezid, does it by Shogeg, does it by Oynus, does it as a Mumel L'Teob and Mumel L'Hachis. It depends. You can't just look at the Avera and look what's gone into it. Same as with the Mitzvah. Person does a mitzvah with geschmack, with chiyus, with abrin. It's a different kind of mitzvah. Memele zog there. Just very quickly, he says, what would happen? Lu yitzuya. Somebody, let's say, every single day does the same abir. Then he comes home from shul, puts his thousand tefillin away. Before he opens up his gemara for the daf, he gets out his favorite ham and bacon sandwich. Right, some nachmida men milchika coffee as well. Yisachal alissa, that's his breakfast every day. It's a massive tithe for this. One day, on his way in from shul, doesn't quite make it home. Big white van pulls up on the side of the road. 4 men jump out, throw him in the back, and they force feed him this ham and bacon. Is he chayiv? Oynus, on the shachamon apatri, our forced. B'chon brings rayas. Not so fast. If this person does this day in, day out, and he demonstrates that this is who he is, and this is what he wants, and this is his madriga, then you can't all of a sudden turn around and say, I don't want this. Of course you want it. Oynus only works if, as we're saying, as the Chofetz Chaim says, if that's not my rotzen, I didn't want it, it's completely against my will. That's why a shogeg is better than a mezid, because I didn't really want it. Why is mezid worse than shogeg? Rotzen. Amazing. I know it's Shabbos, but I have to read the next excerpt, whatever the next chapter in the Ami, whatever the serializing. And he put on the light. I'm sorry, Yeah, and even worse than that is a mumel hachis. He doesn't want to read. He's just said, I'm going to put on that light. It's even worse. So why should you get better than that? I didn't mean to do that. And then oinus is even better than that. Someone pushed me against the light switch. What am I supposed to do? It's all about the rotzen, it's not about the maaser, it's the same light. Obviously, the rotzen that matters, as it does with mitzvahs. So if a person, if it can be shown that this is the person's rotzen, then you can't hide behind something called oynus. You can't hide. Dos devot. And this is the goynus. What's the difference if someone is forced to do something because he's pushed against the light or he's being force-fed? Or a person does something and he's forced to do it because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pre-knowledge? What's the difference between a physical coercion and a philosophical coercion? Like goinus of a goinus. It doesn't matter. Because Baruch is looking, was ist der Rotzen? What do you, I'm running the world, and my idea is going to bring this world to its master plan. Aber was willst du? I would the hearts. Achmona lieber boy, das ist die Icke. Like it says in the Gemara, Kol b'dei Shemayim, chutz, yeah, chutz mi Yir Shemayim. The Yir Shemayim is here. Do you want it? Where is it coming from? Was it? Und das ist bescheid. Kofanim haki gigis, because Baruch is saying, this has to happen. Well, the Torah is going to suddenly sit like Maral said, the Gemara is going to sit the thing. The Torah is going to sit the thing. Are you going to choose me? Not going to choose me? What's kind of, what's for a chutzpah? The whole world was created for the sake of the Torah. So why were we chosen then? Because Nasev and Ishmael, das ist der Rotzen. We said we want this. Klaus weren't chosen because there had to be a Torah. Torah is going to happen anyway. Yom HaShishi is Vav Sivan. But the vot in Kofan HaMikagigas was to say this is going to happen anyway. But now Sivan Ishmael is going to steer because that's the Ike.
Enjoy yourself. Yeah,